Hey, welcome back to another season of Remotely Speaking Up. Join me, Dr. Rochelle Haynes, and my special guests every week as we discuss how the way we work continues to change and how companies and their people can continue to thrive no matter where and how they work. For more on our podcast, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Remotely Speaking Up. Stay tuned for more.
Models in the whole future of work as the importance of talent came to the fore, to look at different models that enterprises could deploy to access skills in non-standard ways. So in standard ways might be traditional employment, using agencies to find temporary staff, using consultancies, using outsourcing companies and the like. But typically organizations hadn't tapped into this sort of on-demand world, these digital talent models. And so we were set up to look at how they could tap into on-demand global talent models, which are predominantly used from a supply side perspective by freelancers. How could they do that in a safe, secure, compliant way at scale? You know, how do you take the Amazon.com concept and put it on top of talent? And so we've developed a whole methodology approach. We've done over 1,000 projects and case studies and pilots now with different organizations of all shapes and sizes. And we're now writing a book with Harvard on how to deploy what we call open talent, same concept as open source in the software world, looking at your workforce as a mix of internal and external, like a blended workforce. How do you deploy that in big business at scale? That's what we do. And it's great fun. It's a really exciting space.
Yeah. I remember when I first met you, and I think I told you that as well. Several people told me that I needed to meet you. And I felt like we were kindred spirits in many ways because we tend to concentrate on the same thing. But how did you get into this area originally? Did you start in wanting to know what was the future of open talent?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I haven't actually been doing it that long. I've been in the consulting industry like 20 odd years, like all of my career. And a lot of that has been in the outsourcing space. So I've run different consulting companies and been a consultant in a space where enterprises, companies would come to find suppliers, like service providers, to deliver services. So it's very similar. And the companies that I ran would help big enterprises understand, should they outsource something? Shouldn't they? What if they did, what would the business case be? How long would it take? How complex would it be? What are the HR implications? And whether they should work with one supplier versus another. Should it be an Accenture or a Capgemini, or should it be a Hexaware or a UST or a Tech Mahindra? And so the companies I ran would help be that sort of matchmaker. It's like a Tinder for big enterprises looking for suppliers. And so I worked in that space for a long time and got to know it really well. And then it was only, I suppose, three and a bit years ago, where I really saw the potential for outsourcing's almost like a digital extension of outsourcing, to tap into people's brains, really, at a macro level, but out-tasking or skill sourcing, but being able to use digital tech to match supply and demand, but match an enterprise's requirements to an individual person or an individual team or a company, in the sort of gig economy. You're using gig economy models, using freelance models. So I embraced that about 3 years ago and read loads of books and, you know, started thinking about it and met loads of people and started to develop my skills in that space. And now I suppose I've become in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, right? become an expert, because it's a whole new area. It was quite funny. I was running a training course yesterday for 12 chief executives on the future of work and open talent. And we were having a conversation at the very beginning, before I'd even started, about imposter syndrome, where like members of the group had imposter syndrome. And then they asked me, and I said, well, I sort of am having that feeling right now, because I'm standing up in front of all of you esteemed leaders and talking to you about something which, you know, I've only really been focused on for the last 3 years or so, but I've become known as something of an expert in, but I have a bit of imposter syndrome because, you know, some of these things that we're talking about are really new. They haven't been proven at enterprise scale anywhere yet, but we're starting to do them and we're learning as we go. And like I said, we've done quite a lot of research with Harvard on, you know, pilots and proof of concepts and projects, and the projects are getting bigger and bigger, but it's still such early days in this space. So I have a bit of imposter syndrome being described as an expert or experienced in this space.
Yeah, I had that exact same conversation with someone this week as well. And this is someone that is my business mentor, and I look up to him as my business role model. And he said to me that he has imposter syndrome and he doesn't know what he's doing. And I was like, you have imposter syndrome? If that's the case, I feel a lot better. And I feel the same with you saying that.
Well, you know, the guy I was describing yesterday, so you start... you have your sort of comfort zone, but nothing grows in your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then you have your sort of your panic mode because you push yourself into doing something else. And then you have your like learning mode, or might have been learning and then panic, and then it goes back to comfort zone again. And what he was trying to say is you should always be pushing yourself to go into this, you know, learning or panicking mode, because you then make yourself get familiar with a new concept before you get back into your comfort zone. But, you know, nothing grows in your comfort zone, so don't just stay in your comfort zone. There's nothing wrong with having a bit of imposter syndrome, and which is comforting for all of us, I think.
That's a good way to look at it. That'll reassure me next time it comes around.
Yeah.
But I do like, you really highlight something important there as well. The fact that you said that as you become more of an expert in this space, you find yourself more and more in a learning space. And one of the things that we found with organizations adapting to the new world of work and this blended workforce is that you're very much right. There is such a new space and organizations are consistently learning. And I think now a lot of companies need to have that learning and adaptive mindset in order to constantly understand that change, which is constant.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, you know, we've worked in the same way for maybe not hundreds of years, but decades and decades, right? We've all worked in the same way. Like I said at the beginning, it's sort of predominantly we've been employed. We take salaries. We work we choose a career at school. Yeah, how often do people say to children, what are you going to be when you grow up? You know, and you get a job and you stay in that same job for years at a time. You know, decades ago, it would have been your entire career. And now, of course, it's much shorter periods of time. But the job would be an employed job with a salary and with paid holiday and with healthcare and with pension and all the benefits that go with that. And so to move as an employer to something which is flexible and agile and remote, you know, and with people, workers that you rely on that you might never meet, is of course pretty new, right? And COVID has of course made more employers comfortable with that format, but it requires a whole new way of thinking for a company across HR, security, you know, IT, compliance, audit, procurement, you know, delivery. All of that requires people to think out of their box, out of their comfort zone, to say, can I really use a freelance worker potentially on the other side of the world via a digital platform with someone I might never meet? I might background check them and make sure they are who they say they are and be sure that they're really good, but I might never meet them, and I'm relying on them to design something for me or deliver something for me or give me HR advice or give me sales advice or strategic advice or whatever it might be. And that requires a different level of trust and a different way of thinking. And it requires new processes, new systems quite often. And all of that requires significant change management in big companies. And it does, to start with, you know, the conversations that I'm sure you have and I have with our clients, you've got to make them feel comfortable that it's okay and that there were going to be mistakes along the way. But if they can make it work, then it opens up a whole new world of opportunity. It always reminds me, and I had this conversation with someone the other day, when Steve Jobs first designed the Apple Mac, he basically, and this was back in whatever it will have been, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s or something, he sort of left the existing office building he was in, and they moved the Apple Mac team to a new office building on the same campus, and they put a pirate flag on the roof. And these guys became the sort of misfits and mavericks who were going to break everything. And he basically said, I am going to redesign what a personal computer is. And we're going to break everything and you're going to hate it, but eventually you're going to love it. Yeah. And I feel like this almost what we're doing with this way talent is engaged. It's going to be uncomfortable and difficult. But ultimately, you know, and we're going to put a pirate flag on the roof. But once we've done it and we've broken things, amended them again and redesigned your processes, it's going to open up a whole new world of opportunities and possibilities and diversity and innovation. And it's going to be great. And that's the vision that we're sort of painting for organizations. And we're starting to deliver it now as well. So I'm, you know, and enabling that for freelancers and for companies is just brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that stand out to me is that old saying that you have to get comfortable with discomfort.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think a lot of organizations, that is exactly it. They're being presented with something that they haven't had to do before. It's change management, as you said, on just a massive scale.
You have to
absolutely rethink the way you do everything and question old processes. But let's take a little step back just for our audience. Can you tell us what you mean? Can you tell us the audience what you mean by open talent? Because we hear this phrase a lot when we're talking about the new world of work. So can you clarify a bit for our audience?
Yeah, of course. When we use the word or the term open talent, we describe really a philosophy, like a mindset of thinking with an open view, an open mindset about the talent that you use in your organization as a mixture of both internal full-time employed experts, but also external experts and skills from a whole range of different sources. And some of that might be freelance, some of that might be consultancy, some of that might be outsourced, but thinking about your organization in an open way, or the workers in your organization in an open way, in the same way that you think about open source for software. And we think if you take that mindset and you think about, you know, talent as being a mix of internal and external. And in fact, I was talking to someone yesterday about having an open talent architect as part of their team. Mm. So that when they go and talk to their clients or their internal colleagues about who's going to be doing this project, the talent architect says, oh, it's going to be a mixture of these full-time brilliant people. And then we're going to pull these people in from this digital talent platform. And we're going to pull these people in from this agency. And between us, we're going to create this ecosystem. And we're going to deliver the project that way. And that doesn't exist, right? That's not a model that exists right now. But I think it's a really relevant role. And I think we'll see more and more people with that type of title. But that's what we mean when we talk about open talent. It's that, you know, open mindset about where your talent comes from and it being a mix of internal and external.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things you said there as well that is important is the fact that bringing in freelancers to the organization or bringing in open talent doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying to replace your full-time employees, because what this whole new world of work, I know that phrase is so overused, but we're going to get here, new world of work, what that's resulting in is, as you rightly said, new positions in the organization, new requirements with these new shifts in thinking and creating a new experimental environment, you will require new roles and responsibilities. So it's freelancers aren't a threat to the organizations. And I think there's still a little bit of fear around that as well.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, and I think a lot of us use this word, you know, blended workforce, which I think is so important. Yeah, you know, I'm not for a second predicting that organizations will have fully freelance, fully remote. They might, of course, you know, unless I say, what do I know? But I don't think the organizations we work with are at any point soon going to have an executive team that's fully freelance, that's going to have strategy and architecture and maybe sales and management, which is going to be fully freelance. Doesn't, you know, I think that requires, you know, full-time vested employees in many instances. But then below that, I do see blended workforces being the right model and being able to, you know, to tap in. You might have a head of marketing who's responsible for all the marketing you do for your company, but then you might tap into, you know, a digital platform for your social media, or, you know, for your agency delivery and creation of your assets. So you don't necessarily need a fixed workforce for that. So I think that blended workforce makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I I mean, I do think there is some, you know, there's definitely the whole fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There's definitely for employees who don't have an open mindset to these things, a bit like with outsourcing, get really threatened by the fact that, you know, you're going to employ somebody for a short space of time who might be better than me, who might be, you know, come in and earn more money than me, whatever it might be, that, you know, is new, and feel threatened by it. And that, again, requires change management. As you say, it's all about education, really, and demonstration that that's not the case. But interestingly, one of the reasons Open Assembly exists is because as a result of that type of failure. So John Windsor, who's a, you know, great guy, who's our chairman and founder, who's, you know, an inspirational guy in this subject, he set up a company called Victors and Spoils, and they're a creative agency. And it was back in, I think, sort of mid-2000s, and he ran this agency, and they were doing really well. But they had before Talent Clouds or Open Talent was even a thing, they created a freelance-based model to deliver their creative services. And they were competing with traditional agencies full of employees. And they were using a flexible resource model, which meant that it was cheaper and variable, and they could pull in experts from different locations. And they won lots of work, and they became a big deal in the industry. And they won the Harley Davidson account. They beat all these traditional agencies, and they were on the front page of magazines, and they were celebrated really in the industry. And then they were acquired by a sort of very traditional French agency called Havas. And Havas have been very well known, really successful, been around hundreds of years. And they acquired Victors and Spoils, and it didn't work. I mean, there was almost like a visceral, you know, reaction from Havas employees as to the integration of this freelance-based agency into their traditional world. And it's one of the reasons Open Assembly was established, because Harvard University picked up the fact that this wasn't working very well and decided to turn it into a case study, a Harvard Business School case study, of how complex it is to integrate a freelance-based business into a traditional business. And if you think about it from a Havas employee perspective, you know, you maybe, and I don't know Havas very well, but, you know, at a really high level, you might join as a junior designer, and then you'd work for a couple of years and become a, you know, a mid-level designer, and then you'd be a senior designer, and then you might be head of design, and then you might become a partner. And that hierarchy has got processes and standards and has been what used in the same way, and it's recognized in the industry. So suddenly you have these sort of mavericks who created this new business and, you know, bring in freelancers that they might never ever meet to work together on these projects. How do you integrate that model into this really well and long established traditional hierarchy? Well, it's bloody hard, and it didn't work. And so what Harvard did is look at why it didn't work, and then look at when it does work at companies like, you know, NASA and Unilever and Microsoft and Accenture and others. What is it that makes that work that didn't work at Havas? And that's really how we designed our methodology and how we became experts in understanding what doesn't work, so that we can give advice on what does work.
Yeah. And I've seen your methodology. If I'm right, it's the network organization. You created a really good framework for companies to follow around, really, as you say, redesigning and getting that change management model right for this particular process, that particular type of blending. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, about the network organization framework?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we call it the networked organization. We created a playbook last year. So version one, if you like, and we are in the process of creating version two of the playbook. And we are also in the process of creating the textbook, the instruction manual for how to implement a networked organization. And implementing a networked organization is really, you know, the manifestation of an open mindset and open talent. And we believe that really mature organizations that deploy a networked organization need to think about it in three dimensions. You need to think about the deployment of talent cloud models. So how do you use digital platforms to supplement or augment or to get expertise? And so we provide a sort of methodology and framework for implementing that. We believe that the second sort of big area is what we call open innovation platforms. So using an open mindset and a crowdsourced mentality, methodology, to bring in new ideas to your organization to deliver, use innovation to deliver innovation. And we think the crowd, in a curated way, plays a really important role in bringing new ideas to play. And then the third area is using that same technology to provide opportunities for your internal workforce. So in the form of internal talent marketplaces. And, you know, you probably saw Hitch was acquired by ServiceNow the other day. You know, Gloat is doing incredible things. There are lots of others as well. But using that internal, for your internal employees, giving them the opportunities to map out digitally their experience and qualifications and their aspirations so that you can use the technology to find future opportunities and new roles and projects within the company to, you know, to reduce attrition and maximize retention. And if you've got those talent clouds, open innovation and internal talent focus together, then we believe you're truly a networked organization. And there are a few organizations that are there yet, but those that are, you know, moving really quickly. And, you know, NASA's one and Unilever's the other. And we help organizations understand how they can get there. And then there's a whole methodology around culture and communication and leadership and ways of working. And funnily enough, we use this methodology, which is the acronym is COLOR, which is COLOR, which is the way the Americans spell it. And so I'm keep working on the methodology so we can fit a U into COLOR. So we can have COLOUR, because that's obviously the correct way that it should be spelled. But we haven't worked out what U stands for yet. So I haven't built that into the methodology yet. I've got to convince my American colleagues.
I was about to say you're going to spark a big debate between our Americans and UK listeners.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like we also have the, as part of Open Assembly, and I should have mentioned at the beginning, we established something called the Center for the Transformation of Work, the CTW. Yeah. And we set that up to advocate on behalf of freelancers, the supply side of the market. And in the way, Open Assembly, the research and advisory business that I run, helps enterprises to understand how to use open talent and become a networked organization. Mm. So it's training and advisory and consultancy. And then the CTW, the Center for the Transformation of Work, helps freelancers to understand what the opportunities are in the freelancing space, how to work with digital marketplaces and platforms, you know, how to or we work with financial services organizations to ensure that freelancers can get, you know, mortgages and health insurance and put into pensions, and that the whole industry has some standards. So, you know, the freelancers are protected. And so that's a really great thing, great organization that we run as a social enterprise, like a charity and not for profit. And that's run by John Healy, who's, you know, a legend in this industry and is doing an amazing things. But again, it's spelt wrong because it's spelt center, C-E-N-T-E-E-R, as opposed to C-E-N-T-R-E. So it's just another one that that I've lost out on, and the Americans have spelt it the way that they spell it.
Yeah, there's no end to that debate. I like one of the points you said earlier about crowd. And I remember when I first registered my business as Crowd Potential, I had to do a lot of explaining as to why I use the word crowd. But that is the new world of work in terms of your sourcing talent. From everywhere, from across the globe, you're sourcing different types of contractors, different types of freelancers. And as you rightly pointed out as well, it's not just the business side that needs support in working together, but also the freelancers. So I think you really, in what you do, in what Open Assembly does, in what CTW does, you found like the right combination to support businesses and freelancers.
Yeah, no. Well, thank you. I think so. And I think, you know, I can't take much credit for it, really. John and the team set it up and have done an awesome job at both getting that enterprise space and the you know, freelancer space and really understanding what crowdsourcing is and how crowdsourcing works and creating a whole community around that. Some of the members we've got within the CTW and in Open Assembly, where we have a group called The Collective, which are the thought leaders in the industry who are part of our sort of, it's almost like an exclusive membership club. And, you know, we've got some really big names in there, and we sort of plan and think about what the future is going to look like. That whole community, that way we've sort of crowdsourced a lot of the ideas, used some of the the crowdsource principles to actually run the CTW has been, you know, been really impressive. I think John and the team have done a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think are, I'll ask one. What do you think is the main thing that companies still really struggle with when they're trying to adapt to this new workforce and catering for them?
There are so many things, but let me pick on one area. So I would, and it's a really, it sounds like a boring area, but it's changing the process. So at a very high level. So time and again, we'll work with organizations and introduce them to the concept of working with a talent platform. Let's just say it's like an Upwork, and you know, other talent platforms are available, of course, and there are about 600 of them. But you know, Upwork do a great job in the enterprise. And an individual team member, somebody in, you know, the technology team, will be set up to use Upwork, and they'll find a freelancer to work with them, and they'll do a great job, and they'll do it once. But then changing their mindset and setting up a process to enable them to do it again and again and again and again is hard. And one of the things that we continually find is that the companies that we work with will do a pilot, and that'll be very successful. But then if we step away once we've done a pilot, they revert back to the way they did things before. And rather than using a talent platform like Upwork to find a freelancer and put the power in the hands of the employed client engineer to enable them to actually tap into talent themselves, almost like an extension of their capacity, it goes back to HR. And HR then want to interview the freelancer, and then they want someone else to interview the freelancer. And then in the way you would if you were recruiting somebody as for a full-time position, by the time they've gone through those three interviews, the freelancer's taken the job somewhere else, you know, and they want to, you know, background check everyone for everything, because that's the way it's been in the employed model. And, you know, if you're working as a freelancer part-time when you might have a full-time job elsewhere, you don't want to go through the background checking rigmarole. You're only designing a logo for somebody, or, you know, writing a PowerPoint slide or whatever it might be. And so all of that process is just old fashioned and takes too long. And so I would say the biggest hurdle for companies to overcome is to stop thinking in the employed mindset for everything and take a different approach to hiring a freelancer to do a task, rather than, you know, the old way of hiring an employee who's going to be with you for many years to play a role. And that's what we've got to get people's mindset shift to, not think about roles all the time, think about tasks and activities and work at speed.
Yeah, I think in many ways, it's still that fear around risk and compliance coming around. So many organizations are, they have this fear of hiring wrong because they can't see the person. There's the lack of visibility sometimes when you're hiring a freelancer. And often that, I think, really comes to the fore, and it results in them almost overdoing the processes or insisting on these additional processes, which then might, as you say, put off the talent. So I think you're very much right. We still have a ways to go in actually converting our mindsets to, well, it's okay to hire in this different way. This is more suited. We don't have to use the same rigid role
exactly
for every position.
Yeah, and what we find, you know, quite often is if you, you know, will inspire the really senior people in the company. And so we'll go in and do a, like a board level presentation or executive presentation. And we, because of the guys we've got on our team, we're really good at that. And they love it. And they're like, wow, come on, let's get cracking. And we'll do some work. And then, but the people who are actually responsible for hiring, they take so much more convincing, and they might get it. And even they've got executive support to do it, but then changing their ways of working so that they do it again and again and again and again is, that's the really hard bit. And we have like, we set up champions programs, we have lunch and learns, we'll have like websites and portals and videos and stories and all the things that you do to do change management well. And it's still incredibly hard. So it's a, you know, change management takes a long time, and there's lots of really good ways to do it. But it, that's the thing, the exec always get it. It's the middle ear that actually have to change the way they work. And that takes time.
Yeah, my final question to you was going to be, where should companies start then in making that change? But I think you very much identified it there where you said start at the top. And we always preach that start with the leaders. And then you find that that change does tend to trickle down.
Yeah, I will always say that, you know, the thing about the open talent, the gig economy model, if you like, is, and almost this has been to its detriment, that it the barriers to entry for enterprises to use it are incredibly low. You know, anyone in any company could go onto Upwork or freelancer.com or Fiverr or wherever and just, you know, buy the skills of a freelancer for a period of time at a relatively low cost, right? But if you, and you might be really lucky and you might get somebody brilliant, but if you don't really know what you're doing and you haven't really thought, you've never done it before because you're a beginner and you haven't had any sort of training and you've not been taught to think about quality or compliance or security or, you know, insurance or indemnity, or it's then it can go wrong, or you might not get a brilliant result, or you might not think about treating the freelancer like one of your team or like a human, and, you know, throwing something over the wall and expecting it to come back as a brilliant product. And all of that basically means that lots of people have tried it and thought, oh, well, I tried that once and it didn't work, so we're not doing it again. You know? And I think the way to do it properly within a company, within a business of any shape or size, is to treat it like a strategic initiative, like a strategic program. Like you were going to implement an ERP program or something. It needs executive oversight, and it needs to have a brand, and it needs to have a mission, and it needs to have measured performance objectives. And it needs to be treated really like a big strategic initiative, because it could have transformational impact on your company. You know, we're working with one company that want to add $1 billion to their value as a result of their open talent program. I mean, this is proper strategic stuff, and it needs to be taken seriously by the chief exec. But also every employee within the business needs to understand what the open talent program is all about. I think it's that strategic. It can be that transformational. So it needs to be treated as such by every company.
Yeah. One of the major things with that as well is ownership. Someone in the company, the company itself needs to take ownership of the process. Where you found in the past, when it comes to hiring freelancers, it's always a battle or a push back and forth between whether or not it's HR's responsibility or procurement's responsibility. But where the company takes ownership and sees it, as you said, as something more strategic, then you get the real value from the process.
Yeah, I mean, we always find that, and if you think of your workers, regardless of how they are engaged, they're all working for you as a company. But the way it works in most organizations is different types of workers fall into different silos, into different buckets. And so if you're an employee, you're looked after by HR, you know, and you're engaged by HR and you're recruited by HR. If you're an agency worker, I mean, that you might be like some sort of MSP program. You might go in through procurement. You might go in through HR, but there's, you know, different models. If you're a supplier doing some work in like an outsourcing type or professional services, you probably come in through procurement, you know, or vendor management or something. And then there isn't, if you like, in terms of digital talent and open talent platforms, there isn't really anybody who looks after it. So you think inevitably, because they're all in their individual buckets and silos, they're not being managed at an overarching level. Yeah. And I'm a proponent of a talent architect role or an open talent role or a total cost of work role, or not just total cost of work, but a role across all of those silos, which looks at an orchestration level at the best model, the best mix of supply to meet demand. And I think having an open talent architect or a head of open talent, and some organizations are starting to employ them now, will really help us to think differently and to think more holistically about talent not being those individual silos, but being something which is absolutely essential, whether it's internal or external. It's part of the currency of business, and needs to be managed at that sort of higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when we designed the Gig HR framework, one of the things that we said in getting the gig rules right was that a lot of companies need a future work strategy. And a future work strategy in thinking about, well, how do they deploy their freelancers? How do they deploy their employees? How do they deploy different types of workers, rather than, as you said, just thinking of one static group And that's one person's responsibility, because you lose the visibility, you lose the strategic value, and then those workers become very casual. So then you end up with almost a class system of workers as well.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all, you know, that's also new, and we get it, and getting others to understand it, will, you know, we're all evangelizing and educating people. And I think, you know, we do quite a lot of work with outsourcing service providers, you know, like with technology service providers who provide a service to a client to help them with digital transformation. And because there's such high demand for their skills, they can't find enough talent. And so we're teaching them to think differently about where they access their talent from so that they can provide services to their clients. And having like a talent architect as part of your pre-sales team, which would never, you know, you wouldn't dream of that, because if you're, you know, I'll pick on IBM because everyone's heard of IBM. If you're IBM and you're going to a client, you're doing a pitch, you take your technical architect and, you know, you'd explain how the solution is going to work. You wouldn't pick a talent architect because it didn't exist, but because the client would expect everyone to be an IBM employee, right? So you wouldn't need that. But right now, I think the world has changed. And I think having a talent architect, which goes to the client and says, well, IBM are going to take responsibility for time, quality, and cost, but we're going to pick the best brains from our hundreds of thousands of employees at IBM to work on this bit. And then we're going to pick the best brains from the rest of the world from digital talent platforms. And they might be NASA scientists, or they might be at university, but we've handpicked them and we're going to orchestrate them. And they'll be freelance, but they'll be looked after by us and they're going to work there. And then we're going to use an open innovation platform to crowdsource new ideas from different industries there. But we're going to manage it all for you. Isn't that going to be brilliant? You know, I don't think there's many clients who would say, no, I'm not interested in that, thank you very much. Mm. But those conversations are really new and progressive. And that's what I think is exciting, because delivery should no longer just be done by employees.
Absolutely. It is very exciting. It does mean that there's a lot of work for us in the future. So
yeah, we're going to be busy.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Barry. You've given us a lot. I mean, I'm going to go back and rewatch this episode, because I feel like I'm learning as I talk to you. You know, this is my space and I enjoy these. We're both very passionate about
it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us in this episode. And just before we wrap up, can you tell us what is your funniest remote work story?
My funniest remote work story. That's a very, very good question. Well, I can think of quite a few actually, but the one that I thought was really funny. So John Windsor, who I mentioned earlier, he spends a lot of time in a place in Mexico. He's an amazing guy, surfs every morning when he's there. And you know, like most people on calls will put a background in. I'd see neither of us have got virtual backgrounds, but the virtual background that some people have is like palm trees and beaches and what have you. And John was working in Mexico, in Sayulita, where he has a house. And the background, the real background, is palm trees and beaches and stuff. And it looks amazing. But we're on a big call and people assume that John's background is a virtual background, until this, like, it wasn't a coconut, but it was like a coconut fell off a tree and hit him on the head, basically. And so luckily he wasn't badly hurt, but the people on the call then suddenly realized, oh wow, that's not a virtual background, he is actually sitting on the beach with coconuts landing on his head. And that made me laugh.
Oh my gosh, that's envious, but also it sounds a bit painful. And then the other thing about that, I bet you probably had a techie in that crowd saying, how did he get that feature in his background?
I need to upgrade my Zoom subscription.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Barry. And just tell us before we go where our audience can find you if they wanted to get in touch.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn, just Barry Matthews. If you type in Barry Matthews and talent, you'll find me in lots of places. But I'm on LinkedIn. And of course, my email address is bmatthews@openassembly.com. And there's a hyphen between open and assembly. But yeah, love to hear from you. Always happy to talk about this stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And for our audiences, if you want to know more about how to work well with your freelancers, with your open talent, we're going to use that word a lot more now. Go to Barry's website, Open Assembly, and you can also go to crowdpotential.co.uk. You can find both of our services there. So thank you for listening to us again. This has been another really interesting episode of Remotely Speaking Up. So take care and see you next time.
And we
sure, yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn, just Barry Matthews. If you type in Barry Matthews and talent, you'll find me in lots of places. But I'm on LinkedIn, and of course, my email address is bmatthews@openassembly.com. And there's a hyphen between open and assembly. But yeah, love to hear from you. Always happy to talk about this stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And for our audiences, if you want to know more about how to work well with your freelancers, with your open talent, we're going to use that word a lot more now. Go to Barry's website, Open Assembly, and you can also go to crowdpotential.co.uk. You can find both of our services there. So thank you for listening to us again. And this has been another really interesting episode of Remotely Speaking Up. So take care and see you next time. And we...
I hope you enjoyed our podcast series. To find out more, follow us at Remotely Speaking Up on Instagram or go to www.crowdpotential.co.uk for our services. Until next time.